Hello, I'm Owen Wainhouse, and you're listening to Architecture Masters, the podcast from the London Festival of Architecture. On the programme this week, we speak to Meskerem Temaru, President of the Association of Ethiopian Architects.
And what surprised me is, you know, the vote, because I really didn't know that this much people vote for me. And I was really worried, oh my God, how many people are really expecting me to be a president? It means how many people are expecting something new from you. That's what worries me. Yeah, you know, there is a saying, one poet said in our country, they told me that the end of you is when they clap for you. Because when they clap for you means they expect lots of things for you. And you're, you know, in our language, it has a meaning. I don't know if it gives sense for you, you know. ያለቀልህ ያጨበጨቡልህ እለት ነው which means you're up or you're down at the end of your election time. Then after your term is finished, then what did you do?
I am Meskerem Temaru from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, an architect and the president of Association of Ethiopian Architects.
This episode was recorded in Addis Ababa as part of a series of episodes we're bringing you from East Africa to explore identity and architecture. Identity is the theme of this year's LFA. Meskerem studied architecture and town planning at the Addis Ababa University School of Architecture, where she graduated as an architect in 1993. After graduation, Meskerem initially worked as an architect on the expansion of the country's university sector. In 2003, she established her own practice, Meskerem Temaru Consulting Architects, which now specialises in project management. The Association of Ethiopian Architects was founded in 1991 and now has close to 2,000 members. Meskerem was elected in August 2017 at the organisation's General Assembly to serve a three-year term as president. The association has a small staff based in Addis Ababa, but working across Ethiopia. I joined Meskerem in her office in Addis, where I started by asking about where she studied.
I studied in Addis and I graduated in 1993.
Okay.
In European calendar.
Yeah.
I hope you know we have a different calendar.
Yeah. Well, to save confusion for our audience, we'll stick with the European calendar.
Yeah.
So in 93, you graduated.
Yeah.
And that was, at the time then, just one university in Addis teaching architecture.
Yep.
And what led you to want to become an architect? What was your motivation for thinking about buildings and thinking about the way people live?
I used to like art.
Okay.
And to be honest, my father was one of my motivators.
Okay.
To be the art. My father was.
Was he an architect? Or?
No, he was an Air Force.
Okay.
In the Air Force. Mm.
Okay.
He was also in the maintenance crew.
Yeah.
And he was in the management. Actually, I think he studied also in Britain.
Okay.
The old days.
Yeah.
So okay. He was more of in the technical part, so he encouraged me.
So maybe more about the sciences and things as well.
Yeah, and thinking? More also into the architecture.
Right, okay.
I think he has all the exposures. He used to bring all the pictures of buildings from his travels. Yeah,
right.
From his travels. So okay. I was really impressed with that.
Okay.
I remember having all those buildings in my room
with
all the pictures, and it was really nice.
So he would travel a lot, would he? Yeah. And then he would bring back that kind of
influence. He had all that privilege due to his work.
Yeah. And I guess kind of slightly different then without a kind of, now young people may be seeing buildings from around the world on Instagram or on websites and things. I suppose slightly harder to get those influences back then.
Yeah.
So you studied, decided then for university to study architecture. What sort of size was the class then? Were you a big, one school teaching architecture at the time?
We were small in number. I think every year
not more than 20 students.
Wow, okay.
Who were enrolled. And yeah. then in my batch, we graduated like 13 or 14 because some withdrew.
Okay.
And we were four ladies and around 10. The 10 boys, so okay. we were only 14 when we graduated.
Wow, and that was the whole architecture graduate group from that year,
yeah.
And you were saying just before we started, you were saying now 22, 23 universities.
We have 23 universities in Ethiopia that give the architecture course. And every year, nearly in every university, there are 80 to 100. Enrolled every year,
okay.
So it sums up like more than 1,000 students per year
are graduating
every year. Yeah.
Wow.
So we have, that's for the past 5 or 6 years, but before that,
it was slightly smaller.
It was still small, and the total is not more than 300 or 400 architects by then.
Okay.
But after the 5 years, then due to the expansion of universities in Ethiopia.
Yeah.
Then we have all this number of young architects.
And so the Association of Ethiopian Architects, of which you're president, when were you elected? When did you start?
In August 2017.
Okay.
Recently.
So midway through your term.
Yeah.
And how many members does the association have? What's the
We have what we call like the active members and members.
Yeah.
So okay. we have The senior ones are really more active.
Okay.
Yeah, so we have roughly like 1,000 to 2,000, but okay. the remaining were now they're just coming and being a member because, you know, when they're so much, the information also is not that much known about the association. But now we have in the past 6 months, we have around 4,000 followers. So we're getting more members.
Yeah.
We hope.
More people will join. And is it the same situation as in the UK where being a member is optional? So you can choose to join, to take part. But the term architect is protected, is it, in Ethiopia? So you have to register to be called an architect. Is that...
It's completely different.
Okay.
it's an option. If you want to be a member...
Yeah,
it's okay. If not, also it's okay.
Okay.
There's no law that forces you to be a member.
Okay.
And there's no so-called registered in our country, by the way. You graduate, then you'll be a graduate architect.
Okay.
And then after 4 years of practice, you will be a professional architect.
Okay.
And then after 8 to 10 years of practice, then you'll be a practicing architect.
Okay.
So this is, I think, only in Ethiopia.
Yeah.
So
there's no other organization that maintains a list then of... everyone who's allowed to call themselves a practicing architect. That's just how long you've been practicing for after graduating.
No. Yeah. There's the Ministry of Construction who registers architects.
Ah, okay. So they are. So
it's only registering.
Yeah.
So basically, once you graduate, then the license you get that says registered architect, not registered actually, architect, graduate architect, is given by the Ministry of Construction.
Okay.
So it's where you get all the licenses in this field. And then they're the one who approve saying you are now a professional architect, and after some years, then the practicing.
Okay.
But the registered is completely different, I think, in your country also. You take the exams, and then you need to pass, and... That's what the association is trying to do, discussing with the government, so that there is no so-called this 4 years, eight years or something. Someone to be an architect, registered architect, then he needs to fulfill at least the knowledge required from an architect. Then we're pushing the government to do that.
And so the association has that role in lobbying government, in trying to push for standards.
Also, the association also participates in policy making.
Right, okay.
The government always works with the associations.
Yeah.
Whenever there is a new policy that's coming, they want to discuss.
Yeah.
And then after that, then the policy will be officially released.
Okay.
That's the trend in Ethiopia, actually, not only for architects, also for others.
Okay.
For management, for engineers, for everything.
Yeah. So you're then elected as the head of the president of the institute. There's presumably a staff and things as well are there who kind of run the day to day. kind of business? What sort of size is the organization?
Big, it's not that much big. Okay. We have a manager.
Yeah.
Recently, and we have the secretary, and then the logistic accountant. Yeah. Not the main one, because most of the things are online now.
Okay.
Thanks to technology.
Yeah.
Only we have meetings or assembly, then we'll need
kind of staffing support.
Yeah, staff, like, and then we have volunteers.
Yeah.
You know, usually the young ones, the students, they volunteer to organize this kind of thing. So we have really good help from volunteering students, architecture students.
Okay.
Which is a positive thing.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Mm. And then your work, so you graduated in, I think you said 1993, and then what was your first job? What did you go on to do after university?
It's a little bit funny. I mean, when we graduated, we were the second batch or the second graduates that were, shall I say, forced to look for a job on our own. In the previous time, the government used to, when you graduate, the government used to, you know, give you a job.
Right. Okay.
You know, they just give you where you are, you're going to work, which office or something. But then all of a sudden, 1 year before our graduation, then we were released, shall I say, free. We were the second ones who were exposed to this. And by that time, the biggest problem was there were only a number of offices who were practicing architecture, doing the architecture business. The others all were government. And the government, to hire a person, you know, they need to give a notice, and it was a very long process. And there was, I mean, and the demand and the graduates were not...
No, it wasn't there.
Okay, it was a new experience for everyone, you know,
so
for the employers.
So hard for private companies then to set up, and hard for them to, I guess if the government are employing their own architects, it's easier for them to do in-house work maybe.
Yeah, but the situation was, you know, for example, I remember there were 3 or 4 private offices, not big scale private offices.
Right.
So, for example, now what you asked me, if I go back to your question, I worked for a research by Oxford University, sponsored by Oxford University through Addis Ababa University, and I was in a rural house study out of architecture for 1 year.
Okay.
I was walking around in the rural areas
and
asking for what needs to be done in that area and filling questionnaire for some months.
Academic research, really.
Yeah. Okay. Out of architecture, by the way.
Right, okay. So
and after 1 year, then I came back and I started my first work in the first university expansion projects. I was hired in a government office. Was that temporarily? And I worked for the university expansion projects where... Some were military camps studied to be changed to universities. Some were existing universities expansion works. Okay. And those were the studies I was doing for new development of the universities.
Wow. Okay. So some of that was modifying existing buildings then, and some was new builds.
Completely new also. From big
from
military
scratch.
Camp into a new university.
Right.
That kind of, I mean, a complete change of situation.
Yeah.
That was my first experience.
Okay.
Yeah.
And kind of education buildings then. Mm-hmm. How long did you stay there? What was the...
Actually, I traveled most of the main cities of Ethiopia to study this, like site analysis and do some research.
Okay.
So which ones are okay for university development and the site condition and some surveying study. And then surveyors were going everywhere following us. We were a team, actually, not only me. We were a team of architects.
Working with surveyors as well and working
And checking also. And then new designs were developed by the seniors who were doing this. So
it's a kind of architectural assistant role, maybe, I guess, those first.
So it was, I did that almost for nearly 2 years, 1 year and 10 months.
Okay.
I did that part, and then I changed to, I went to another office.
Okay. And where was that? What came next? What was the
It was, actually, it was the... Tourism Ministry.
where, what do they call the name? Old name. Tourism.
Okay. Yeah.
It was a tourism, so under tourism commission. I was working on interior projects for
resort hotels and things.
Hotels, okay. And you know, this government airports and something small, interior designs.
Okay.
And but after that, then I changed again to intern to another office. Which was a well-known big consulting office.
And that was a private office then?
That was a private office.
So that's interesting, a kind of change then from, I guess, with the economy developing and kind of private business becoming maybe a bigger part of the economy then.
Yeah.
As, so you moved to one of the larger offices then in Ethiopia.
Yeah, basically, you know, why I was changing from one office to another office was because I was not happy with what I was doing,
right,
to be honest.
Okay.
You know, sometimes you need to love what you are doing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I feel
it takes a while to find
the
part of architecture that you really, really love.
Yeah. And when I went to this consulting office, the architect, the senior architect, was the owner.
Yeah.
Let him rest in peace now. He's not alive. He asked me, why are you running here and there? And I told him, no. You know, I'm not happy with what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And even if the assignment you're giving me now in this office, if I'm not happy with it, then I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Because I know I'm going to leave.
Yeah.
He said, okay, give me 1 month. Notice only before you leave.
Yeah, yeah.
And I stayed in that office for 8 years.
Wow, okay. Must have done something right.
Yeah, because it was the whole package that I was doing. I was doing from scratch, from the idea, then the design.
Yeah.
And then I'll be part of the design team also, because I'm a junior, you know, there are also the seniors.
Yeah.
And then I'll do the bill of quantities. By then, in our country, there was no this quantity surveyors by that time. So the architect does everything.
Wow.
So the architectural part, I do the quantities and compile with the structural, electrical, and all the other designs and bill of quantities.
So doing really a lot of the role of a
quantity
surveyor.
And then I
survey.
Tender, I prepare tender document, and then I do the bid analysis.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when the project is awarded, I'll be the resident architect.
Yeah.
So it was a complete package, which I really liked. I learned a lot from that system.
Yeah.
So from here to there, being an architect, going through the whole system.
Yeah.
And then being on site, supervising, and all the details, the reporting, the sketches, and everything. And then I love that full package.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm still doing the full package
now. Okay.
Yeah, in my office also now.
And was that directly there? So after you stayed at your previous firm 8 years, you then decided to set up by yourself, did you?
Yeah. And then I decided to set up my own office, which was more or less, it was the same system that I used to work. Now I'm still working the same system. I do the design, and then I do the supervision, the tendering supervision, and the whole package. This office is actually mainly, this office is known for this process.
Okay, you know, for the kind of project management part.
Of the project management part also.
Right.
I was
doing
that.
Right, that's interesting. We talk a lot in the UK about, the RIBA has this, what they call the plan of work, and so the different stages, and you get the impression maybe some architects just love the earlier stages, the kind of designs, and then, it's kind of been interesting talking to practices in Rwanda and in Kenya as well about the role of the architect of record, or maybe the executive architect, and that's at a different stage, but quite enjoyable then. I mean, maybe with to be able to take you that architecture is broader, do you think, here in terms of doing some, is that still the case, doing some of the role of the quantity surveyor, and is that still part of the job of an architect in Ethiopia? Or is
recently things are changing, because like what I said, in our time there was no so-called quantity surveyor.
Okay.
Even the field was not that much known.
Okay.
But recently the universities are giving quantity surveying, the construction technology management. There are graduates that graduate with this quantity surveying work. So now you can have the staff and do the quantity surveying, or they have also their own offices, separate offices doing this part. But from what I read, or from what I see from the previous, I was reading one on the internet saying, in the previous times, the architect or the engineer through experience will be the contract manager, project manager.
Yeah.
And that's, and I said, wow, okay, so this is nice. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying an architect should not be or should be, but when I read that, that's the international practice. Yeah. Well, that's good, I say, because most of the architects, like what I say, they enjoy the early part, the design part, and most of them, they don't want to go into the site and do the technical supervision.
But I mean, I think what's interesting is maybe there's a pushback from that now in some countries saying, we as architects, we've let go of that project management, and that other people have taken over parts of the role that were traditionally done by architects, and whether that's a way of architects maybe marginalising themselves by shrinking down and down into a more specific field, just focusing purely on the design rather than the wider project management maybe that architects used to do more of. I just wonder about that kind of role of the central importance of an architect is maybe around the project management and being the leader of the team.
In our country scenario?
Yeah.
If you leave your design and then if you let it go,
yeah,
then
it's gone.
not only that. After the building is completed,
yeah,
sometimes you doubt that, is this my building? Is this my design? Because changes are, I mean,
right.
The anything can be changed in that design.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, when there is a system, like your country in Europe, that you need the approval of the architect to change anything from the original design. Yeah. That's the system.
Yeah.
Here, we don't have that problem.
Okay.
I mean, the system is not there. I mean, the controlling body, there is. But clients, employers, and the extent of changing your design by an engineer, an architect, or another architect, or an employer, I mean, you cannot avoid that unless you are involved up to the completion of the project. So mainly our architects who are really successful in their design
are the ones who are on
are
site.
The one who are there up to the physical implementation and completion of the project.
Yeah. Okay.
Otherwise, then it's a mess. It's always a mess.
So that's really important to be on site and to be there whilst the thing is being built.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, Ethiopia now, it's recently developing faster.
Yeah.
And it's not about how many architects graduate. It's how many architects are really experienced, who have the potential, the knowledge, the capacity to run a project up to its completion.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the biggest point where we're always saying that it's not, you know, sometimes they want to compare you after 23, 25 years of experience. They want to compare you with a fresh graduate or something. I don't want to blame, because it's because of awareness.
Yeah.
People are not aware of the need of an architect and how to use an architect in their project and up to what stage.
Age,
and they don't know. So we need to teach and make the public aware of the service of an architect and the importance of an architect. That's what I feel.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I guess with the kind of rapid urbanization, the requirements for, you know, decent city planning and, you know, to ensure cities don't turn into places that are not pleasant to live, you know, that real importance of considered design and people really within the profession. So I'm interested then in what... I mean, kind of two things, I guess, interest me a lot of the time. One is how people decide to start their own office, you know, rather than work for someone else, that as a process. But also then interested in what made you, what makes one, and specifically you, put yourselves forward for election. So you decided to run, you were elected. So what was back in 2017, what made you decide that you wanted to run to be president of the Association of Ethiopian Architects?
There is no so-called lobbying or running in our country.
Okay.
It's just a vote.
Okay.
You know, in a general assembly, then every 3 years, you need to have the president. So every 3 years, there will be election.
Yeah.
And in my term, in this time, 2017, August, I was just like everybody sitting in the meeting, and there were list of people. I mean, people were, the members were asked who you want to vote for president, and you give names.
Yeah.
So I was giving somebody else's name, and my name was there already. And what surprised me is, you know, the vote.
because I really didn't know that this much people vote for me.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you'll have a small difference of, but the vote, I mean, really surprised me, and I was really worried. Oh my God, how many people are really expecting me to be a president?
Yeah.
It means how many people are expecting something new from you. That's what worries me.
Big expectations.
Yeah. You know, there is a saying. One poet said in our country, they told me that the end of you is when they clap for you. Because when they clap for you means they expect lots of things for you and you're
That's
done.
A I mean, that, yeah. Say that again for me. The end of you is when they clap for you.
In our language, it has a meaning. I don't know if it gives sense for
you.
No, you know?
It does, yeah.
The end of you is when they clap for you. Means when they elect you, they clap for you.
Yeah.
That's the time that it's the end of you.
You're
which
in
means
trouble.
you're up or you're down at the end of your election time, because the expectation people have when they clap for you means they are voting for you, and then after your term is finished, then what did you do?
You're going to be held to account.
Yeah, exactly.
So. You say the phrase in Aramaic.
In Amharic, it means "Yalekalih yajabetjabulhet yajabetjabulh letno." It's in Amharic.
That's lovely.
"Yalekalih yajabetjabulh letno." That's the in Amharic.
That's the phrase. It's just a nice
That's
clip.
That's what said by the famous poet Tsagaye Gebremedhin. He let him rest in peace, and he's not alive, but that was his word.
Yeah, and that's really stuck with you, I guess, and kind of motivated.
So I'm so
motivated.
Worried about every process that I'm going through.
And what were the things then you wanted to deliver in your presidency? What are the kind of important things for you, for the profession, in that you were keen then to push through whilst you're president? Are there particular kind of areas that are important for you?
To be honest, when I see the number of members, when I see how many universities are giving architecture and how many students are graduating every year, I was really worried, because how many of these architects are really known wherever they are working, known as an architect or practicing their profession, or how many of them will be frustrating because of the, you know, the socioeconomic, the politics, and the situation of the country. That was really one thing. And what is my responsibility in this? Because I'm in the practice.
Yeah.
The other thing what worried me was about these 23 universities. How many of them are really giving the proper education to be an architect? You know, sometimes when you are the first enrolling student and when you are after 25 years, you know there is a very big difference and there is a system. I feel like, I don't want to say this, but I feel like the first batch are like guinea pig, because the teachers are new, the students are new, and everything is like a trial and error. Even though there is
changing.
A even though there is a curriculum, but even the curriculum to run that curriculum and teach the students, it's really a very
so the kind of quality of education was the thing you really wanted to focus on in terms of
So that's what worried me. And now starting from my election time, starting from October, we're traveling with the executives, me and one executive. We're traveling to the universities, especially the far ones, the ones that are far from the center, from Addis, to check, to see, and to encourage the students of architecture, so that you know they need to try on their own. Also, they don't need not only expect from the university the lectures and something, they really need to try. This is not only from school, but even in the practice, they really need to learn to learn a lot by reading, research, and everything. They don't need to expect only from the daily.
Yeah, they have to do their own.
They have to do their own. That's what we're encouraging. And we went to Arbamenj, Olaita Sordo, Meghalay.
Yeah.
And tomorrow we're going to Hawassa and Rila, to another two universities.
Okay.
And we're going to travel all over. Up to January, we're trying to reach like more than 15 universities.
Right.
Okay. So that it's at least it's good to encourage them. That, especially me as a senior, going and encouraging them to how to practice, how to study, and then how
that's
to prepare themselves. That's really, I feel like that's my responsibility. One in the undergraduates, one in the graduates. Also, you know, if you can address more graduates, you'll have more members. It's not only about more member. The more member you have, the stronger your voice will be when you, you know, when you have
talking to government or to clients. Or
So, which means then the value of an architect in a society and the importance will be really significantly important. That's what I feel. So that's what I'm trying to work on as a president. Yeah. I hope I'm not talking like another president of a country. I'm just a president of an association.
Well, that's, I mean, it's fascinating for me, as I say, a couple of weeks ago, talking to Ben Derbyshire, who's the president of the RIBA, and talking to him about him doing a very similar thing, speaking at architecture schools and having a real sense of the profession kind of on his shoulders and being responsible really for encouraging the next generation and the voice, I think, is a powerful, you know, speaking as a profession, in terms of the kind of the societal good that architects can do. And we're kind of interested then in how this sort of came up a little bit speaking to Ben, how as a president you can, you're running your own business, but how do you manage your time between being president and being, you know, still having the firm to keep going?
You'll be overburdened. Yeah. I mean, you have to be honest.
Yeah.
But both are things that you really love working.
Yeah.
So sometimes you don't feel that you're tired. Yeah. You're tired, actually. Physically, you're tired, but you struggle. Yeah. And the basic thing is, you know, being a woman also. Yeah. You know, in our country, the woman, everything is on the woman's shoulder. You go home, you're a wife. Yeah. Either you need to cook or do something, and the kids and the study and all this thing is mainly on the ladies. Yeah. It's not only that. When you go to the universities, you see the girls, the young girls, and when they see you, they're really motivated because, Ethiopia is not a developed country. It's a developing one, and if you see the students there, the ladies, some are from the remote rural areas, some are from the center of the town. You can see the gap, the difference, and you can see their confidence. And when they see you, they say, we can be, you know. That's what really motivates me.
That must be hugely rewarding.
Yeah, and sometimes they ask me, how did you make it, being a lady? Well, they're right, because most of the architects, they have left the profession and became housewives because they could not struggle through this system. And me, for example, if I tell you one example, someone told me in the previous years, I said, I'm an architect, and they don't understand architect. And I said, okay, I'm similar to an engineer.
Yeah.
And they said, no, there is no lady engineer. So, I mean, in this kind of community, surviving being an architect is really tough.
Yeah.
But time changes and things change. And 25 years, I'm still in this practice. Yeah.
So it's interesting. I hear much the same stories from London about architects, female architects, telling other people they're architects, and it being assumed, you do it the insides of buildings, the interior of architecture. No, I can do. We do big buildings, and still there's that perception of, which I guess time and people like you having to battle to change those perceptions, which is really.
I think maybe the level is different, but the problem is the same.
Yeah,
because people's understanding in the developed countries and people's understanding in the in our country, countries like ours, developing.
Yeah.
Yeah. The problem is there, but the level of understanding is different. So I feel like it's tough, but we need to struggle.
Yeah.
No choice. When you become an architect, then you need to know all this, and then you need to struggle.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then just sort of interested in the kind of references for being an architect, so in terms of going through architecture school and where the what sort of role traditional Ethiopian architecture might play within the role of a modern architect in Ethiopia now. So I guess people, in Britain, people there's a kind of a wealth of history from Georgian architecture, Victorian architecture, a kind of traditional style, which perhaps pervades a bit of, you know, there's a certain parts of the architectural community, you know, people famously talk about Prince Charles, the heir to the throne, as being very keen on traditional architecture. I'm kind of interested in where people get their inspiration from and their references and their identity as an architect, where that comes from, and how much you think that that role of tradition plays in the kind of formation of buildings in Ethiopia, or how it's are the influences coming from overseas now? Are they more international for kind of corporate and commercial buildings?
I think it's a there is one, shall I say, wrong perception.
Yeah.
So, because for me, you know, the weather in Ethiopia, wherever you go, it's really good.
Yeah.
I mean, if you come to Addis,
yeah,
we have the best weather.
Yeah.
We don't, I mean, and when we see, when you see Addis, it looks like the glass buildings and everything, some that just dropped from Europe to Addis, something like that. And when you see about really traditional thing, people understand modern architecture as this glass buildings,
yeah,
which I don't agree with. Because if you go into the, really into our cultural buildings, the traditional ones, in every culture, they have their own way of doing their buildings, the material, how they treat the inside, and how they do it, even how they construct it. By the way, the most expensive construction is the traditional housing.
Right.
Because it's handmade.
Yeah.
And everything has its own way of doing the detailing, what I mean. So for me, the vernacular one, I love that part. But how to modernize it, how to make it and use it in this kind of modern, use it as a modern building.
Yeah.
I mean, you need to study something. There are some studies that use it in the town, in Addis, or you know, develop it to be a modern thing. That's what's lacking. I think that's a misunderstanding or a misconception,
right,
because I don't prefer a glass building.
No.
I prefer, it's not only being a glass building also, okay? I mean, but the vernacular one, the materials they use, the wood, the bamboo, and everything might not work for the high-rise buildings, I understand, but there are elements that we can take from that.
Yeah.
And we have the stone buildings,
yeah,
you know, Lalibela also. We have those technologies, I mean, in the old days also, which we did not use now in the modern. And I feel like people need to understand and give value to vernacular, to the traditional one, and develop it. For me, modernism is not modern architecture is not this. Modern is, you know, making the vernacular to another level with the technology, with the time.
Yeah.
That's what I feel. So
I'm just kind of really interested then in how, in a sense, we stop Addis becoming, or any city, you know, London for that matter, becoming another version of, you know, of Shanghai or of Rio or of Sao Paulo, or that kind of where you might get the urban sprawl or the informal settlements, and then commercial buildings which are out of place. You know, how are we still, in terms of that modern city, you know, but it still has its own identity? And I'm just kind of really interested in what people want, in a sense, and at what stage they want a building to be local to them or to be their own building rather than to be a kind of plonked in from somewhere else.
Basically, you know, the if you see Addis, most of the buildings are private owned.
Yeah.
And these people, they, wherever they go around, they see similar buildings and they impose it on the architect also.
Yeah.
But the point is, this the buildings that are abroad, they have their own quality in everything. For example, if you see my office, this is a single glass.
Yeah.
Okay. And every time it cracks because of quality.
Right.
Because, you know, for noise, you do, you know, the double glazing and the laminated and something. But these private owners, they don't know these details and they have no clue. Even though you advise them, they think of in terms of money.
Yeah.
And they say, no. So even building this, these buildings, the modern ones, the glass ones, if we have this kind of clients who want really to do this glass, then keeping the quality is one of my really worries, which they don't usually, they have the money power, so they don't want to listen to the architect because they think that the architect is costing them more.
Yeah.
And they don't see the safety, the necessity and everything, and the standard also of the
I guess
country.
It's a kind of a short term, you know, in the long run it might be cheaper, but the kind of economic cycle means they're just trying to do it as its cheapest.
Now they're saying, no, we need this good.
Yeah.
Because they're seeing from other buildings that some are for rent, but there will be no one to rent it.
Yeah.
Because of, you know, you see the east, the west sun into the office and you will
baking.
Have baking.
Yeah.
We say it that, you know, we always say we have 13 months of sunshine because we have 13 months.
Right, 13 months of sunshine.
So we say this with this kind of offices with west sun, we say they have 13 months of sunshine in the office. So it's something
kind
like
of
that.
Unbearably hot because of cheap building materials.
So okay. I think people are facing that and now, you know, they're becoming aware of what we mean quality.
Yeah.
I hope it will take time, but I hope it will be improving. And like what you said, you know, I wish that we have this traditional and vernacular things, even to use it in our houses, in our, you know, small low-rise buildings or something, so that we will not lose our identity, you know.
Yeah.
And when you go into Addis, you say, this is Ethiopia, this is Addis Ababa. Not seeing these glass towers and saying, where am I?
And then I guess I'm kind of interested in recognition of sort of your members' work and the work that architects are doing, how that, there is obviously, Raheel has been nominated for the Royal Academy's, one of the Royal Academy's awards, and I think was joint winner of the Aga Khan Prize a little while ago. So there's a number of kind of international prizes out there. I just wonder how the kind of, does the association recognize the quality of work that members do? Do you have any awards programs, or do you, what's the kind of process for recognizing talent within the profession? Is that?
We have different awards.
Okay.
And every year we have the Lifetime Award. We use it, we do it actually at the General Assembly every year. The Lifetime Award are the senior ones, the ones who are near to retirement, who stay in the architecture profession, practicing architecture. Then we have Lifetime Award for them.
Okay.
And then we have the Best Architecture, the piece, where you see nice buildings with good quality and including built environment also. After it's completed, and we have like the one that Raheel has many buildings like that, and we have also other architects, and there's always a competition.
Yeah.
With, you know, you choose one project and you compete, and then it will be evaluated, and then we have the Best Architectural Piece Award, and we have also the students.
Right. Okay.
Project award. You know, from every university. Students will be in this competition with their own project. It can be an idea, it can be a research, it can be a design, it can be anything.
Yeah.
So the best...
Just judged by their peers, by the members.
Yeah, okay. And then the universities will have their own jury, and then after that they evaluate and then have one or two from their universities to compete with others. And then the association will have... they can also directly send their projects for competition. And then we have the Students Award, which is very interesting. I mean, I see these students really sometimes shocked when they're told that you're going to be, you're
awarded,
the winner, and you're the, that was, I mean, for me.
Yeah, it's kind of life-changing for some students.
And that's what the students say. It really changed me.
Yeah.
That's what they usually say. Yeah. So we have this kind of recognition. But, you know, internationally... not so many of our designs are really sent for international competition.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but we have really good architects in Ethiopia. The last year, I think it was last year, there was one exhibition in the United States, and the designs were taken, and even the designers were there also. Right. And everybody was so surprised to see this kind of, design, architectural
really quality
design.
Yes.
That's the. I think that's more or less the first time that that was done by the university, actually, by Addis Ababa University School of Architecture, organized by that. But not much. Okay. I mean, most of the local architects in Ethiopia, they don't send their projects for competition or something, unless there is a, like the Aga Khan Award that Rahel was awarded some years back, that there were, because there were a team of international architects. So they, you know, I think that's, it's a traditional or cultural influence that we have, that, you know, in our culture, you don't talk about yourself. You don't advertise yourself. It's not the dumb thing.
But it's interesting. We, I mean, I was talking to Rahel about taking photos. You know, a lot of the schemes she had worked on, she didn't have. You know, the photos of the project were photos she had taken on her phone. You know, and I guess the kind of idea of architectural photography and employing someone, a professional, to come in and take professional photos, is almost kind of, like you say, a bit maybe boastful or a bit...
That's what is considered in our culture. And I think it's not right. I mean, how do people know about your work? Unless you say it.
You have to tell them.
You have to tell them.
Or at least...
It's the culture that's boasting is not accepted in...
Maybe there's a way. It's interesting, the kind of role of... we call kind of architectural PR in the UK. So architects are not normally, it's the same in London, architects aren't that good at talking about or even often writing about their own work, that they use very architectural language, which is hard for other people to understand. So increasingly they pay someone else to do it. So you say, I don't want to boast about myself, so I'll give you some money and you go and and maybe that will start to come as you start to get onto the world onto the world stage with some of the amazing work going on here.
One time I was discussing with Rael and I told her, you know, one day you're going to forget your pieces, best pieces of your designs, because you don't have the document, you don't have most of the things. Maybe you'll have only the hard copies, and how many years are you going to run this office, your office? And then, you know, so it's like what you said, maybe the best way is to assign someone to do that part, and then you do your architecture, so you're not considered that a boasting architect.
Well, I would certainly be happy to do some of the boasting on behalf of the association overseas. So we'll take the we'll take the podcast away. And so how can people, if people do want to find out more about the association or about architecture in Ethiopia, what are the best places for people who are listening to look or to find out more?
There is a website now, actually. They're updating it. Actually, it's maybe it will be active like in a short time. So we have the website there. So, actually, to be honest, being a president, I just want to address, I don't know how many people are going to listen to this podcast.
We get a decent number of listeners.
We want international architects to share their experience to Ethiopian architects.
Okay.
Because, you know, me, Rahel, do have the luxury of traveling. You know, abroad, but there are some really architects who have a good potential but cannot travel. You can say family or finance or something. We want to have that experience from international architects. And usually we want to invite also some architects to bring to Ethiopia for 1 or 2 days and have assembly and then share their experience, their works, how they did it. Which is a nice thing to motivate also the other architects.
Really nice.
Thank
you so much for your time. That's been
a real
insight into the association and your role as president. And really delighted to have spent some time with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Owen. Thank you.
You've been listening to Architecture Masters, the podcast from the London Festival of Architecture. On the programme this week was Meskerem Tamrou, President of the Association of Ethiopian Architects. You can find out more about Meskerem and her work at architecturemasters.org, from where you can also subscribe to the programme and follow us on Twitter. If you've enjoyed this week's episode, why not leave a review or a rating with your podcast provider, as this helps others to discover the programme. Music for this week's episode was from Peter Lagono and Raw Music International, Kisumu Mixtape, via the Free Music Archive and released under a Creative Commons license. From Addis Ababa in Ethiopia, I'm Owen Wainhouse. Thank you for listening.